Welcome, everybody, to another weekly Team REI Vault huddle call. Today is Tuesday, February 9th, 2016. Welcome to the call, and excited to have you. This is an opportunity to ask questions, open dialogue. Can be really anything in nature. It can be technical around Podio or marketing. If you have questions about that, usually we're spending more time talking about real estate deals. And we have everybody muted for those that are new to this call. And you can press star 5 on your phone if you have a question, and then we'll unmute you and bring you into the call again. That's star 5. And then as normal during the week, always email support at reivault.com with any questions that you have. Any questions that you have around marketing or any change requests that you have, if you want to add zip codes, change your marketing budget, questions on Podio, et cetera. And then if it's a deal question, something that you want some help on, recommendations, always email dealhelp@reivault.com. We ask for 24 hours for us to respond, but we try to get to you in 24 minutes. And the only other thing I'm going to say for some of you that are new is you'll always, whenever you send an email to support, you'll always get an email 24 hours later asking if we've satisfied and we've done a good job with your question. And we really appreciate any feedback that you have. We try to keep a super high customer member satisfaction rating and something that the team is focused on. And with that, Chris, before we open this up, I see a couple of questions that are in, but do you have any updates that you want to share on deals or any points to the group?
Just that I heard, I'm going to probably test it out tomorrow. Sean, I'm friends with Sean Terry. He had a podcast recently, and he had a particular tip which I thought was interesting. And the tip was that regarding meetups and how to access people that are in meetups. So there's a lot of meetups out there that are real estate related, RIAs, et cetera. And then what ends up happening is that people join in, and so you might have a list of 500 people, a list of 1,000 people. And you become a member of that meetup. And I think there's a way for you to go into that meetup once you become a member, and you're able to grab the email address for the entire group, and then just take that email, put it into your Gmail account, and then be able to email the entire group en masse. So in essence, if there's, 15 groups, 15 real estate groups in your area on their meetups, you would then be able to go into your particular area, and then be able to email, become members of all of them, and then when you have a property for sale, you'll be able to email them, the entire group, and then obviously bring those people into your landing page and try to get their information and put them on your buyers list. So, I just got a property here locally in Miami, so I'm going to be testing that out. We're going to be implementing that tomorrow or the next day. And obviously, we'll keep you guys updated. But I thought that was an interesting tip and a way to really tap into, just a quick database of buyers that are out there. So I'll give you guys results on that. But I thought that was pretty interesting, actually.
That's awesome. Awesome. I don't really have any updates. I might bring Aaron into the call. I actually went out and looked at an interesting deal. Aaron is in Colorado, but she's also working a couple of counties for me in California. And so she's been working with a particular seller who's got a beautiful property. After repaired value is probably $1.4 million to $1.5 million. And seller's older. She's been working with him for a while, but finally got into a point where he's ready to sell, and he's been looking for $850,000, which is actually quite a bit higher than I'd want to buy it and put it under contract, all cash. But I went out, I went out and met with the seller yesterday. It's a gated community in probably about a half hour from Silicon Valley. Super, super high demand. But I met with the seller and actually met with the neighbor who let me in. Property could actually be just turned for probably $60,000 in repairs. We could probably move it for 1.3, meaning a rehabber would probably pick that up. But if I were to buy it for all cash, Chris, I told this to Aaron, if I put it under contract for $725, we'd probably be able to move that for a $50,000 wholesale fee, as is, and move it quick. It'd probably sell in a day, and I probably already have the buyer. But anyway, when I met with the seller, he's just kind of, he's an older guy. He's living in an assisted care facility. His kids aren't involved. And so when I kind of walked him through the numbers all cash, he kind of poo-pooed it. He wasn't excited. And so, and pretty much it was almost the end of the meeting, right? If I were to come in with an all cash offer and that was it, then we probably, you know, we'd probably be working with him for another 3 months. So I started talking to him about his interest and if he's planning on leaving the facility. He called it an old person's warehouse is what he called it. I'm going to bring Aaron. I'm actually going to unmute your line here. You're unmuted here, by the way, just to discuss it. But I started asking about his plans and how much it costs him if he's got good care. And, you know, how's he doing on the payments, if he's current on his mortgage payments, because he does owe about $250,000. And he started talking about it, and then I said, well, what if I were able to, you know, what if I were able to get you closer to the price, but you would be a little flexible on how we pay you? And he just totally warmed up instantly. And at the end of the, after 15 or 20 minutes, I pretty much had a verbal agreement. He wanted to think about it for a day or two, but I had a verbal agreement that he'd be flexible on payment terms. And so my ultimate goal is to get him closer to the $850,000. It won't be that. It'll probably be maybe $775,000 and get a long-term owner carry where we could make a lot more money. So I'm trying to take this deal for maybe a $50,000 quick profit and maybe make a couple hundred grand, you know, over a period of time and still sell the house and get a rehab, but make a lot more money. And so anyway, it's interesting just the ability of coming in with a couple of options, right? All cash versus more creativity and turn a deal into a substantial higher amount of money. Aaron, you're there, right, Aaron?
I'm here. Hi.
Hi. So the question for you, how long have you been working with this seller? The lead came in off of a postcard, right?
Yep. Yeah, it came in off of a postcard, and let me see. I think I've been working with him since October.
Okay. And so originally when you talked to him, if you remember your notes, sorry to put you on the spot, but when he called, was he interested in selling, or did he call to be removed from the mailing, or how did that initial dialogue happen? And then how did you turn that from October into getting him interested so we could go see the property and possibly buy it?
So when he initially called, and then when I spoke with him, he was interested in selling. He was very curious about, you know, what our offer would be. And so just the initial conversation was just understanding where he's at in his life, what his needs are, why he wants to sell. Does he have family support? So initially he was in this, he had broken his hip, and he was in this, he's a funny guy. He called it the old people's warehouse, like you said. And he was only supposed to be there until November and then wanted to go back to this house and then sell it and then buy just a smaller place to live in, you know, for the rest of his life. He had it, the 850 price set in his mind because that's what a realtor told him they would list it for, as is. And so that's why he has that in his mind. I think I did send him a pre-sale offer, or I verbally offered him an amount lower than that, and he kind of just, he laughed, and, you know, it was all a lot of good interaction, but, you know, just the price wasn't where he wanted to be. So then, let's see, fast forward to a couple of weeks ago, he called back and just wanted to revisit the conversation, found out he was still in the old people's warehouse, and found out more that, you know, more of the strain that he's going through financially. So it's expensive to stay at this place. He still has a little bit of a mortgage left on this other home, the home we're trying to purchase, and he doesn't have kids helping him, and he's been in this place longer than he had planned. So the process has been that he's just more at a place where he needs to sell. He also mentioned bankruptcy in this last couple of conversations that I've had with him. So that was like a flag for me just to realize he's probably not showing all of his cards, you know, at this point, but it was just something that indicated to me that he's probably a lot more motivated than we realized initially.
Yeah.
And I can keep going, but I don't know if I answered your question.
No, it was perfect. I went out there, I met with the neighbor, and the neighbor basically told me the whole history. He said that he's got a strange kid. He's got three kids that don't want to have anything to do with him. It was interesting. The house, when I walked into the house, it was an absolute dump. It had crap everywhere. And I knew instantly. I'm like, okay, perfect. This is the type of house we want to get our hands on. And the neighbor, I know the neighbor is very close and actually goes to see the owner often. And by the end of the 30 minutes that I was with the neighbor, I know that he would be pushing hard for us to be the buyer. And actually, it had to do with I got into a political conversation with the neighbor. And he would have, I told you after I called you afterwards, I said that he pretty much invited me to come hang out with he and his family anytime I wanted. I was almost like a new son, right? And so
Yeah. That's
good because he's definitely going to help. Because I told the neighbor what we would do and how we'd make the house beautiful, and that we do 7 to 10 houses a year in the area, and this would be perfect for us. And then we just turned it from an eyesore into eye candy and make it really pretty and find a really nice family. And I said what would be really great is if you had an opportunity to meet some of the family. So he really warmed up. He saw us as an opportunity to find a better neighbor and turn that house and even increase his value, because the neighbor started talking about how he wanted to at some point sell. And I told him, I said, we would love the opportunity of buying your house, too, down the road. So I gave him my contact information, and I said, one of the nice things about us coming in and buying this is that we would definitely, we have a habit of increasing the purchase value of all the houses in the neighborhood. And he got real excited about that, right? So anyway, did that, and I said, it would be great if you wanted to, when you see, you know, the owner the next time, if you would just, you know, give him a heads up that you met us and met me, and here's my contact information if you ever need to call me or call Aaron. And so that was good. And then when I met the seller, he went from, you know, somewhat lukewarm to pretty ecstatic when I left. And he pretty much said, yeah, I like this. This is definitely the direction that I want to go. And my goal would be to set up a long-term owner financing scenario where even when we sell the property, we would end up doing really what's called a substitution of collateral so that we could utilize some of those funds. Let's say the seller is going to get $3,000 or $4,000 a month, in fixed income at zero interest, but we would be able to use that in the form of lending or putting on other properties, which is kind of where I would be heading if we were to get him closer to his price. So I definitely think I walk away from that. I think that, you know, obviously, I don't think he's going to sell it to anybody else. He definitely does not want to list it with a realtor. So we'll be back in contact with him in the next day or two and see if we can wrap up and come to a conclusion on a deal, because he definitely wants to sell. The other thing is he really would like to get out of where he's at and relieving the financial strain. He doesn't want to have to think about that house. It needs probably two dump trucks just to get the crap out of the inside. It looks, you know, there's 50 years of stuff in that house. So I told him he could leave everything and we would take care of it. He wouldn't have to worry about it. And he had a big smile on his face when we left about that. So anyway, that was great. Great job. If anybody has a question on that, Chris, any questions for me? Pico?
Sorry, I was on mute.
Any questions?
Questions for you? No, I guess I'm thinking to myself that I just have a hammer. That I go around town just try to hammer people. But you're more of the guy with the sword. You know those French guys that they do the sword and they kind of like, you know, do all the stuff? I just have a single hammer. I guess what I'm saying to everybody is just I definitely need to get more tools in my tool belt.
It's just interesting. It kind of goes back to the idea of having multiple options, right? So he can figure out the pain. You know, his initial thing was $850, right? And he can't buy the house and make a lot of money at $850. And so it's kind of if that's the only option we could come in with, I would have walked out with, you know, just an hour and a half of time, you know, wasted going into an old person's home, which, you know, that was painful as we all get a little older. So, but now I came in with, I had another option, right? And it totally went from a no into, you know, heading down the path of a yes and making even more money. And who knows, at the end of the day, a lot of these deals, I might come up with two options, and at the end of the day, he takes the lower price all cash offer. That's all I'm trying to do is keep that door open and moving forward with another tool. You know, it's like going and trying to build a house with a screwdriver, right? Sometimes you need a hammer and a chain, you know, a saw, you know, and all the different things that we do with building houses. Well, cool. Aaron, great job. Any other points you want to add, Aaron, before we open it up on anything else, that deal or any others? Any news from the buyer and seller? I know you're in the process. We're flipping that other house. There's another deal. We were going to make $5,000. And the buyer and seller weren't in total agreement, or the deal wasn't finalized. The seller wanted, you know, $14,000 down, and the buyer wanted to put $2,600 down. And so I've been working with Erin to show her how to take it from a $5,000 wholesale flip to maybe $7,500 or $10,000. Right, Erin? And it's coming together similar to the way I said it would happen, right?
Yeah, it's literally point by point the way you said it would happen. So, I think if you have time after the call to chat, we can figure that one out. There's a couple updates on that one. So,
cool. Awesome. Okay, I'm going to mute you. It looks like I'm going to bring in Nasser into the call here. All right. Nasser, you're on live. And did I say your name properly? I always mess it up. Huh?
No, Nasser, you said it correct.
Okay. I'm good. What's up, brother? How are you doing?
Oh, everything's good. I can't complain. I just needed some clarification. I know me and you got the one-on-one call next week, but I have like a polio question for right now. With that, the polio question that I have, okay, so I'm in the beginning stages of trying to grow a team, and I want to do it exactly how you and Chris have it set up, and because I it's simple that way, and it's a lot less overhead the way you guys have it set up, so I kind of want to do it that way. So now I have one. I have I'm not on the phone no more. I have an acquisition manager. So, I mean, he's doing a great job working the lead, getting the contracts, and getting the deals closed. I have him set up in the podio space. If I were to bring on another guy, do you bring on that other guy into the same podio space? And if so, how do you divide the lead? Or do they supposed to get a separate podio space?
No. The same podio. You're okay with both of them seeing all the leads, right? Which
yeah.
I would say yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you add the next person, what I would recommend you do is send an email to support@reivault.com and just say in the subject, please add additional podio user, and then provide the person's full name and their email address. Okay?
Right.
So that's first and foremost. And then if you want to divide up the lead, the easiest way to divide up the lead is send an email to the support team and ask them to add a new field that's called you could call and our team will know how to name this, et cetera, but they could create a little field in Podio with the person's name, your salesperson. So you could have, let's say it's your phone person, they'll have his name or her name. And then your acquisition manager, and then if your acquisition manager is working a lead and it's his lead, he can just select his name and get to those leads quickly. Or if some stuff is yours, they can select you. That's really the easiest way to do it. There's some other things we can do, and it's probably better for me to chat with you on what you're trying to accomplish when we do the account review next week.
Gotcha. Okay.
But that we do that all the time. You know, Graham's on the call today as an example, and Graham's got a large team on Podio, and so they're doing this all the time. They'll have different people that are assigned leads. And there's ways that you can automatically assign those leads. So sometimes the leads can be assigned in more of a round-robin approach, or sometimes, you know, some people kind of have a special way that they assign. And yours will be very simple, but as you grow, there's some other things you can do in Podio, and we can help set that up for you.
Okay, well, yeah, I'll get more further in details next week with our account call. I didn't know. I thought I had to set up a different Podio space, bro. That gave me a simple,
no.
Yeah, okay, so that's
yeah.
pretty simple. Yeah, that's
yep.
my question,
yeah,
man.
Yep, for sure. I would imagine what happens when the leads come in, they're going to first go to your lead person, right, your inside sales or your lead manager that just works the leads and qualifies and does a lot of the follow-up. And then as soon as it's a good lead, ready for your acquisition manager to work, have an appointment, go out and meet with the seller or close it or whatever it is, that's when it could get assigned to them. That's all real easy. We can help you with that.
Okay, but the way I have it set up, my acquisition guy, he does all the pre-screening. He does
yep.
everything. Yeah, so there's
yep.
no inside salesperson. He does everything. So I was just confused on if I do a mailing campaign, how do I know, you know, who gets the leads? Because if it's a first-come, first-served basis, you know, somebody might feel that unfair.
Right, right. There's definitely a way to do that. And there's definitely a way to do it when you grow as well. So let's say down the road you're going to distribute the leads to different people. There's different ways to do it. Some people do it by kind of area. A lot of people do it more round robin. But there are some people that do the assignment, right? Some people might have three acquisition managers, but somebody's sort of managing the assignment manually. But that's all real easy to do. And we just want to understand, you know, a little bit more of what you're trying to accomplish, and then we can set it up for you.
All right. Well, yeah. Okay. Well, great. All right. So that's my question. And unfortunately, the Carolina Panthers lost. So, you know.
I didn't want to bring that up, but since you brought it up, yeah, you know. I didn't want to say this the last time he called, but little Peyton Manning, he's an old man. I kind of wanted him to go out in a good way. Newt will come back, hopefully. So I didn't want to say that. I didn't want to jinx it, but now after the fact, you know, but, yeah, it should have been the better game. How about that, at least?
They outplayed Carolina Panthers, so they earned this. The defense was good, but I don't want to take too much time on that. But better luck next year for the Panthers.
Yeah,
I have Erin's muted in Colorado, but I'm sure she's smiling because the Broncos. Are good. Well, good stuff. If anybody else has a question, you can press *5, and we'll bring you into the call. You can talk about any deal or any question you have. And if we don't have any more questions, then we'll end this call. Let's see. This is Graham, it looks like. I think this is you, Graham. Is that correct?
Yeah. Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's happening?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. I first want to say is I've been using the dashboard a lot more with your KPIs. I love that feature. So I just, for people out there that aren't using it, it's awesome. It simplified our life a little bit, not having to do it ourselves on, you know, on spreadsheets.
Awesome. And our team is actually providing that to you kind of uniquely on every Friday, correct?
Correct. And I love it. I wait for Fridays now.
Awesome. No, that's great. It's working for the team, and we've had discussions whether we want to do more of that for people. One little note before you jump in, Graham. So you brought up a really good point. For all of you that are using Podio, we have the deal dashboard with all the metrics. Super helpful. You should have a Podio app, a Podio application that you should see, and it says dashboard. And if you don't have that, you could send an email to support@reivault.com and just request for the deal dashboard to be set up. And if there's training, it's really quick. You just click, you go to the dashboard. When you want one, you just click add a dashboard. And you click requested, which it just says, you know, and then you click save. And then 24 hours later or less, you'll get a dashboard with your metrics. And we do ask everybody just as standard, to request it once per month. If you need it more often, let us know. We'll set that up. But it takes about an hour to 2 hours for our team to get those things created. And usually we do it on a monthly basis upon your request. And there's training. It should be pretty simple. Well, thanks, Graham. What glad that's working for you.
Yeah. All right, I got two questions. And you don't have to answer one, maybe one next week. The first is just what mail campaigns, you know, do you see working the best right now? You know, I know we talk about this on a personal basis, but I'd like to hear it overall, maybe from Chris too. Which one of your direct mails or a couple of direct mails do you feel like are getting the best returns right now? And then my second one is about hard money lending. Like, our business is getting more and more into hard money lending. And because so much money is starting to go out for that part of our business, I'm getting fearful of, like, regulations with SEC and being a mortgage broker and all these things, and if you had any experience or do any hard money lending yourself.
That latter one was probably for me. And, yeah, to this day I still do quite a bit of lending, and I've got quite a bit of experience. I'll definitely give you – we can chat about that. But let's start with the campaigns, Chris. You want to talk about the campaigns a little bit? We can have a dialogue about what's working. Chris is probably muted. Chris? Chico? They have lost him. And we did lose him. So...
Yeah, and Gary, one of the reasons I brought up the hard money lending is because you keep talking more and more about these, you know, alternative ways of picking up properties and kind of having some funds available. And, you know, my thinking is if you do more of those and you have these funds available, hard money lending is a great return. So if you can get someone to sell their finance or to use those funds somewhere else, I think it's a good place to put your money if you don't need it for buying property.
Right. Right. So, Chris, let me just see where he's at. Hold on real quick. So, let's see. He looks like Chris dropped off, but he'll be back in a second. Okay, let's talk about the lending first. So, I love lending and being the bank. You're really doing individual trust deed investing. That's actually the term, or private lending. I would always go through a broker to broker the deal. So rather than you actually doing all the work, you can find a hard money broker or private money broker that's licensed. I think that's the best. That's how I would always recommend it. Every one of my deals that I lend, I always go through a broker who will broker the transaction for me using their license. They'll make sure that I get an owner's title policy, which I always want 100% of the time, that the buyer will actually pay for. And I would also strongly encourage to always be in first position. I used to teach how to do rehab lending and lend in second position and actually make a lot higher return on your investment by having a first and second and getting leverage on your money so you can get somebody. But in this market, I'd be real cautious on that. And if you're going to try to do some type of deal, Graham, a lending deal, you could always send an email to Deal Help, and I can kind of help walk you through, you know, what I would do and some of the gotchas. I would also encourage you to lend out not on after repaired value if you can avoid it. Lend on purchase price. So if somebody's purchasing a property, let's say they're purchasing a property for $400,000. Like for me, I never go higher than 65% of the purchase price. And I actually lend out a little lower interest rate. Like the going rate here in California is about 12%. Real easy for me to get 12% of my money. And sometimes I can even get a point or two. It's called a discount point. So if you're a broker, they're points, but if you're the actual lender that's putting up the money, it's actually termed a discount point. So I like to keep, like when I'm lending my money right now, I'm usually, I told you, like I always look for super low LTV loans. So like I like 35% to 50%. I funded a deal. I don't know, this is actually in December. It was a real nice one, but I funded 25% of the purchase price, the repeat buyer, and they just, you know, it was going to be a 6-month to 9-month loan, but, you know, I put up $125,000 on a $400,000 purchase. So I love those because I got no risk and I get a 9% rate of return. So it's a nice way for me to get fixed, you know, a fixed rate. And it really is an asset the way I look at it. It's not a liability. And my downside risk is I have to foreclose. That's never happened. So that's first and foremost. So the big one, be very careful of being in second position. A lot of people will lend as a rehab loan for a higher interest rate or maybe even a cut of the profits on the back end. So let's say somebody's trying to buy a house and they need money to fix up the house. Some of these borrowers will try to come in with zero money out of their pocket. I'd never do a zero down deal where the borrower's not coming up with any money. I've been involved and I've seen a lot of blow up deals and super, super high risk. And I'd always make sure you're in first position. And in terms of the regulatory stuff, the regulatory stuff really isn't a problem in two areas. One is if you use a broker, you really are not going to run into any regulatory issues because you've got a broker that's licensed. And not even that's required, but in many states it is. So you just use a broker because then you don't have to worry about writing the mortgage and for the deed of trust. And do it right. a broker will usually charge some junk fees. That's what they call them. They're usually not a lot, but if you brought the, let's say you found the borrower and you wanted somebody to negotiate, you know, actually write up the paperwork, you know, for me, the broker usually charges, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 to do that, and then they will service the loan. Like my broker charges a half a percentage point, a half a percent interest to service the loan, which is almost nothing. And the borrower pays for everything. The borrower pays for appraisal and all that stuff. So could you get into lending quickly? Yeah, you could. If you had some money you wanted a loan, you just find a broker. You want to make sure that you're the lender, meaning your name is on the mortgage or your company is on the mortgage. It'd be serviced. You don't want to go into a fund. And let's see, what else can I tell you? There's what are called fractional notes, where let's say you're going to lend let's say there's $200,000 being lent, and you're going to lend $50,000, and then a few other people are also going to participate. That's called a fractional note. And that's all fine and dandy, but I personally would never lend in a fractional note unless I have at least 51% of the fractional note, because you want to control that note. And if you're less than 51% and the deal blows up, then you're not going to have the controlling interest to define what happens. So anyway, that's probably a couple of days of education, but I gave you kind of a high point. Really not hard to lend money. The easiest way is to just find a broker. And when I'm talking about a broker, it's usually like a hard money loan. Like I got a guy in California, been working with him for years, and they have $60 million of private money, meaning, you know, people like me and my father-in-law and my mom and other people like that, that lend money for a straight interest rate. So they talk to the borrowers, typically, you know, cash buyers, real estate investors type of thing. And they go look at the property, and then they find one they want to fund, and then they come to me and say, hey, I got this great deal. Do you want to fund it? And they take care of everything. They make sure all the paperwork's done properly, and then I wire transfer funds. And sometimes I'll use my qualified retirement plan 401k to do that. And, you know, a nice lending deal shouldn't take more than an hour to 2 hours worth of work at most on your part if you're doing it right. For me, I'm just looking at the paperwork, and sometimes I'll go look at the property. Usually I don't. I'll go out to Google Street View and make sure that it's not a big, you know, bomb hole in the ground. I want to make sure that there's a house there, and I got a good broker. Does that help you, Graham?
Yeah, it helps. Yeah. I guess I'm a little more involved because I'm doing everything. You know, I'm doing the comps. I don't have that middleman that you have. But
I'd find the middleman. There's lots of brokers out there, and to do this. And I find what you're looking for is a hard money broker, or a private. They don't like to be called hard money because it has a negative connotation. They'll usually call themselves a private money lender, and you want to make sure that they are licensed. And then if you talk to them, you know, the simple way is you could call a broker or two or three and say, hey, you know, this is Graham and I've got funds to lend, and I wanted to know if you're looking for any money to lend on your real estate deals. And they'll usually take you to lunch and buy the lunch for you, because most private money lender or hard money lenders don't use their own money. They're always coming to guys like you or coming to guys like me for the money. So if you have the borrower, that's ideal. If you could bring the borrower and say, hey, I got this borrower and I got this money, but I'd love for you to broker the deal, and then they'll go vet the deal and do the comps and come back to you and write off the paperwork. That's what I do. I don't do any of that work ever.
Okay.
Yeah. So...
Gary, I'm back. I had dropped off, and then I had to dial back in. So I've been for a while, but I'm not sure if there was a question, perhaps anything I missed.
It has to do with the, the mail campaign. But Graham, what other questions, pointing questions do you have for me on lending? I will tell you, if you're looking for borrowers, let's say you got $500,000 you want to lend, or $100,000 you want to lend, and you're looking for borrowers, we do have some marketing campaigns that we could mail out to cash buyers that basically say, hey, I'm a lender and I'm looking to lend money. And you can send marketing to borrowers, right, to cash buyers, and see if they want any money from you. But it's a great marketing approach, right, too, for cash buyers, and feels, you know, for just finding borrowers, because most cash buyers are looking for more money. And you could do a marketing campaign. There's a couple of letters that we have that we could set up for you down the road to mail to cash buyers. And then there's no SEC regulations around that, because you're not. It's when you're sending out marketing to try to, you know, to get investments, that's when you may have some problems, right, with the SEC. But if you're actually mailing to borrowers where you have money to lend to them, that's not a regulatory problem.
Even if the money's being lent from a company name, like if, you know,
doesn't
it was white, it doesn't matter. Okay, because it's our personal fund. It's when you start.
Now, it's the intent, right? If you're raising money, that's a problem, because if you're raising money to the public, then there are Department of Corporations and the SEC have lots of guidelines around raising money. And so that's a problem. But if you have money to lend, then you can actually go out and market that you have money to lend. That's not a problem. And as far as I know, and I'm pretty certain that I've never seen any laws around, you know, if you've got money to lend, that's fine. There are, if you're a company or you're a person, and by the way, from a legal perspective, a person is a corporation. If you actually look at Black's Law Dictionary and the Uniform Commercial Code, the actual name of person is a corporation. That's a little detail. But there's usury laws in most of the states where you can't lend above a certain interest rate. And that's actually, but like in California, that law is null if you go through a broker, right? So in California, I can't lend at more than like 8% or 10%. It has to do with the, whatever the particular.
Yeah, ours is 18%, I believe, in Florida.
Yeah, but I personally don't have a problem if I go through a broker, because the California law says that if it's non-owner occupied, by the way, the other point is I would always, for the most part, some reasons why, but I only do non-owner occupied loans because of Dodd-Frank, and I there have been exceptions to that for me, but you gotta lend longer than 5 years, so, or you can do 11 months, so you can lend 11 months. There's some, at least in California, but I don't, you know, most of the laws go away if you're lending to real estate investors. And I don't like the drama anyway. I prefer to lend to real estate investors, non-owner occupied. Does that help?
Yep.
Awesome. Question for you, Chris, and I can add to this, but Graham was asking, what are the best marketing campaigns that we're using right now?
In terms of list or in terms of
list
pieces?
List and pieces.
You know, I just in terms of list, you know, I would say that there's always a foundation, and there's things you're always testing and tweaking and trying to figure out. But I mean, for me, it's interesting, because I've talked to people a couple of times, and they say, well, gee, I mailed this list, and you know, I'm going to mail something else. And I always find that I'm always mailing to the same list of people. It's almost like in real estate terms, your farm area. And then sometimes what we do is we mix it up. We always, in terms of blind copy and regular copy, sometimes we do mix it up, and I'm always constantly testing and tweaking postcards in order to try to get a better response. But for me, so far, the blind copy stuff works the best, and just being aggressive with the follow-up, et cetera. And I always find that with the campaign, if you think about the 60-day touches, a touch every 60 days, they're not going to see the same card for how many it is for quite a bit of time. And so I always find that people, and not saying that you do, but people always have the idea that, hey, they've already seen this card, and they're going to see it again, but they're not really going to see the same card again for quite a bit of time, because it's almost 10 months, right? It's the 60-day rotation. And so I always find that I'm always testing, but so far I haven't been able to get anything to beat the blind copy approach, and just being aggressive on the calls and the follow-ups and the hang-ups, et cetera. That was a question or not? But who was it that asked?
Yeah, that was the question.
Graham.
Yeah, and can you be, I guess, maybe I'm an idiot, what is blind copy?
Oh, blind copy is where, you know, they get something, the blind copy is where they don't know that the nature of the card is that you want to buy their property. They only know that until they hit the voicemail. So versus a copy that says, hey, I want to buy your house. And so then, therefore, if the copy says that, by the time they pick up the phone number and actually dial the number, they've already said, yeah, I do want to sell my house. Yes, I like your postcard the best, and yes, I want to get an offer from you. And so there's three yeses, theoretically, that they need to say to themselves before they go to that step with you, versus a blind copy, we're just asking them to call that phone number. You know, we're trying to get them to call the number, and I'm testing a couple different ones right now just to see if we could do better in terms of that, but it's just getting them into the voicemail, and then the voicemail does the work of trying to convince them to go to that next step. So in marketing, we always talk about, your objective is not to, I always like to think of it in terms of what is the next step that the prospect that we want them to take, and just focus on that, right? So you're not focused on them convincing them to sell you their house. Because they don't know you, they don't know anything about you. So the next step is, what's the immediate next step you want? It's, you know, for them to call the phone number. And then after that is, you know, for them to have a conversation with you, and maybe for them to allow you to get into the house, to see the property. And so the blind copy is designed around that, is how can you just kind of keep on moving them along little by little, step by step, until they get to the final destination with you.
All right, if you have the time, well, then you talk about lists that you're preferring right now?
You know, in terms of List, it's still the absentee. It's still the absentee owner. List, the only thing that the core absentee owner, the same list that we're using with REI Vault, the only thing that I am testing right now, but I don't have any sort of significant data, is just trying to test the owner-occupied. You know, owner-occupied properties, a little bit tough, because there's a lot more mail required for them to generate a significant amount of calls. And there's a lot more of them, right? So if you wanted to blanket an area with absentees versus owner-occupied, you're going to find, just certainly a lot bigger number. So the things I've been playing with on that, but it's still just trying to test through that, is just being more narrowly focused. So if I take the total zip codes that we're targeting, then I did a count the other day, and I narrowed it down to, like, just 10 zip codes that we do a lot of deals in predominantly down here in South Florida. Now I take those 10, and then I see that there's two or three of them that most of those deals are coming down. So now I narrowed it even further, and now I'm going into those particular zip codes and then doing some mailings and on owner-occupied properties to try and see if I could unearth some deals from that. But I'm tweaking a couple things here or there, and still trying to, the results are mixed. So right now my go-to is still the absentee owner list.
Okay.
Does that answer or no? All right, if it doesn't, then let me know.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. And also what I would try to do, the other thing I would try to do is a suggestion. Whenever you're trying to, I look at what's working, and I try to extrapolate from what's working any particular criteria that makes sense. So if, say, I am looking to do an owner-occupied campaign, and I know that my absentees are in this particular set of zip codes, and I'm also looking for, hey, the houses that I buy are generally between, you know, 1945 to 1965, and generally the assessed value is X, then I'm just trying to narrowly focus more and more when I have such a huge group of prospects, such as just the regular owner-occupied. And so the reason I mentioned that is that one of the things that I think would be useful, if you're not already doing it, or maybe if you haven't done it, but maybe you can go back, is you go through your deals that you've done and try and see if you can figure out what those other characteristics are. You know, what year it was built, what the, you know, any, you know, the assessed value, when it was purchased, et cetera. And then that way you can kind of start to compile a database of sorts for you to then be able to draw from and try to figure out what other areas in your market. The only thing that when you do that, it has to be a historical. So in other words, if you bought 123 Main Street, you flipped it, and now you want to go back and revisit that property, you really have to go back and look at that property record at the time that you purchased it back then, not in today, because it has changed, right? It's no longer, you know, certain characteristics haven't changed, but so, you know, I'm always just keeping track of what I'm currently doing and just always looking at the data and seeing, hey, you know, is there anything here that I can grab from to try to test against other lists or other niches? So, not sure if that helps.
And Graham, what I would suggest is to do it. It's probably time to do another account review, and we can look at the data and look at the list, and then both Chris and I would come on to the call and make some recommendations to see where we're at. Like, where the response rate is with you and what we're mailing and then, you know, what else we should do. I know that we did the shipwrecked campaign. I don't think it worked real well. I know it was a small list, but we should look at exactly what we were mailing and the results and see what kind of changes we should make. So if you want to schedule that, you would go to reivault.com/review, and then Chris and I would be on that call together. And we'd have a chance to actually review the results together in advance.
All right,
so
thank you, guys.
To do that, we can do that for sure.
Oh, and I know we're going over time now. Just a local competitor. They're pretty big players in all of Florida, and I bet Chris even knows them now because they've all moved to the Fort Lauderdale, Miami area. They're called Meridian, and they go by, on the seller side, they go by Buy Guys is their name. But I just wanted to say is they're big on web presence. They, you know, they've hired full-time employees to just work on web leads, you know, IT guys and guys that are webmasters that can build up those web leads, which, you know, I don't do enough of and would love to have more of. I think it's becoming a larger and larger percentage of our market. But they only work on pay-per-click, which I've been told is roughly only 10% of people who browse the internet. 90% of people typically go with an organic web page, which would be SEO, but 10% go pay-per-click. They'll click on the ad that you see up top. And so I'm just saying is they're having a lot of success because they're paying a lot throughout the state, but they're getting a lot of leads, and they're doing it over the phone. They're making an offer within 10 minutes. And they're buying a lot of property. And it's just something I wanted to get out there is they're being very successful in the pay-per-click realm with buying houses virtually over the phone. And it's something that I think isn't hit as hard as it should be by investors.
Interesting. So with Meridian, what is their website? You said it was... What do they go by?
So they have two sites. They have a site for obviously their buyers or investors, and they have a site for their sellers. They separate the two. But they're called Buy Guys. I think it's just BuyGuys.com. And
yeah,
about four or five cities now. They kind of have almost like a pit of guys down in Fort Lauderdale that just answer phones all day long all over the state. And they buy big volume. They're doing really well. And it's just something to look at and say, hey, not a lot of people are doing this, at least not in my market in Tampa. They're one of the few guys that pay per click regularly almost all the major searches for Tampa, and they buy a good amount because they pitch me a lot of stuff all week long, you know, 7-10 mm-hmm. properties a week, just locally in
right.
my market. So they're doing something right.
Interesting. So that's interesting because they're I used to deal with them. Well, they used to call me on my deals, and as a wholesaler, I would never want to sell to them because they were kind of loose. In other words, they would say yes to a deal, but their yes didn't really mean anything. It just meant that they were able to sell it, and they were really transparent about things, et cetera. And so I never dealt with them. And they were doing direct mail back. This was a couple years back. They were sending mostly letters. So that's interesting now that you're saying they. And I see their site is the Buy Guys. TheBuyGuys.com. Yeah. So it's interesting.
They do both, but they're having they've been having a lot of success on pay-per-click. I know this because the inside guys are telling me, you know, they're fielding 10 calls a day just from web leads.
Interesting. Okay. Very interesting. Well, I appreciate you sharing that.
That's where our market's going. I know as a 30-year-old, I search everything on the internet. Like, I would never, ever pick out a piece of mail from my mailbox and call for a service. That's just me. And if I did, I'd be researching the internet immediately about that company, which probably wouldn't happen. But everything I search, even my lunch, I'm looking at reviews for what I'm going to eat. And I think that more and more people are going that way, and more of our market is going to be that way. So.
Very interesting. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. I do find their website quite interesting. I think it definitely stands out from what the other ones look like.
Yep.
So I think that's kudos to them for doing that. That's pretty interesting way that they have it.
All right. That's all. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Graham.
Bye.
Awesome. So, Chris, I think we're at the end of the hour. Any final remarks before we close down for today?
No, I'm good. I didn't have anything else to add.
Okay. Excellent, everybody. Great questions, and we'll chat with you next week. Take care.
Thanks, guys.